Hey everyone, this is Megan Bell and William Duhame for John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. The pandemic has affected us all in many different ways. We all went from partying and celebrating everything together to socially distancing and wearing masks in the blink of an eye. Schools specifically have been affected quite a bit. Normally, schools are a place where both students and teachers walk shoulder to shoulder down the halls. However, due to COVID-19, standing less than 6 feet away from someone is looked at as a crime. Because of this, schools have had to quickly adapt to an online format. Both students and teachers are now stuck sitting at their desks all day, staring at their computer screens.
Students' and teachers' views on online school vary from person to person. Some of them are experiencing major success from online classes, while others find themselves struggling with the new format. This shows that there can be both pros and cons to online school from an education and mental health standpoint. Online school has had major effect mentally on many students and teachers who went from seeing each other every day to rarely seeing one another. The lack of social interaction and the lack of divide between school and home environment has played a significant role on students and teachers' mental health. In this documentary, we'll be going over some of the pros and cons of online school, as well as the effect it has on the mental health of both students and teachers, as we interview several teachers and professionals working in the mental health field.
Our first guest that we had the incredible opportunity to speak to is Milena Nacheva, a teacher over at John Rennie High School. She'll be giving us her opinion on online school and how it affects both students and teachers. Do you believe that this has an effect on students' mental health?
Greatly. I think that they're already forced to be in bubbles and classes and things like that with people that they don't necessarily get along with, But I think that being at home for some of them is very difficult. Being removed from their peers is very difficult. For some, I think coming to school is an escape from whatever situation they're going through at home. And by forcing them to stay home, it just makes it that much harder on them.
And do you also think that it has an effect on teachers' mental health?
Entirely. I think that we go into this field not to sit behind a screen. We go in to have that rapport with our students, to be around them, to interact with them, to laugh with them. And, you know, staring at a screen, you lose a lot of that. It's not personal. You're detached from everything you went into, all the reasons that you went into teaching to begin with.
Yeah. Can you list any pros and cons of online school?
I mean,
cons outweigh
cons definitely outweigh the pros. I'd say for a teacher, there's a lot less discipline if they're online. But I guess as a more seasoned teacher at this point, I think that it forces me to, you know, learn about technology, to learn about what's out there, which I wouldn't know what Zoom and all the rest are if I weren't online teaching. So I guess if I'm looking for pros, that would be one, but there aren't many in my opinion.
Once again, that was Milena Nacheva, a teacher over at John Rennie High School, giving us her opinion on online school and how it affects both students and teachers.
The next guest that we sat down with is Amin Sadi, a director at the Douglas Mental Health Institute. He will give us an insight on how mental health care has seen an impact due to the pandemic.
How is online school viewed in healthcare?
The online school is viewed as many other adjustments that the pandemic put us to adjust lately. Our workers, we have a couple of our workers who does teletravail. We have some student who does the teletravail. Actually, what is the most important thing is that the online schooling has to be balanced with presence, because the student, the youth, needs this social living and gathering together, knowing even in the pandemic that it's difficult to gather together, actually, but at least to have a half class or with distance, with the 2 meter distanciation, this probably could be helped. So yes, the online schooling is something good, but I think it has to be balanced with being in school as well.
What are ways that students can improve their mental health while doing online school?
I think personally it has to be something balanced between the online schooling and the presence at school, even though it's not necessarily recommended for more than eight people to be together. So I think the schools has to adapt and adjust them offer to be able to allow this gathering of eight people and less. But also I think we see more and more in mental health, like people are going to consult for different kind of problems. And the most important thing is that the students shouldn't keep this struggle for themselves, and they think that they should go and talk about and try to find solution. We have a lot of professional around the school, so I think what will be important is that people start to normalize this mental health problem and talk about them more and more.
Once again, that was Amin Sadi, a director at the Douglas Mental Health Institute.
Our third guest that we had the chance to sit down with was Teep Menon, another teacher over at John Rennie High School. He will also be giving us his opinion on online school and what its effects are on students and teachers. Your opinion, please, on online school.
I don't necessarily hate it due to the circumstance. Because of the circumstance we're in, I understand the benefits of it. And having kids at home, and because it's already a year where the kids have lost so much in that there's no extracurriculars, there's no activities at the school, there's nothing that we could do that fit within the rules or the COVID imposed rules, then having them online every second day doesn't necessarily take away from their schooling, and it also allows them a little bit of a rest and a reprieve from the daily kind of grind of coming in and sitting in the same class all day and not moving around and not being allowed to move around. So them being at home gives them that freedom to kind of get up and stretch and not wear a mask. So I see the benefit for it within this context. Outside of it, I'm yet to have an opinion.
Mm. And finally, do you think that they're going to adapt online school into regular schooling post-pandemic?
I hope not for elementary and high school. But I could see them finding ways to make it effective in work-study programs where, you know, anyone who's, let's say, even with teaching, who knows that, like, you know, you learn a lot in school for it, but a lot of the real training comes from being in the milieu and doing it. You know, work study programs where kids can go to work and they could, you know, once or twice in a week in the afternoon log into classes just to kind of check in. I could see that happening. takes away a lot of the traveling associated with when it gets to like CGIPS and universities. So that could work out well. There could be, you know, more admittance into certain programs because they're able to add capacity with online students, not necessarily worried about dorms and housing. So I could see how they could do it. I don't know if that's something that is necessarily, you know, wanted. I know I wouldn't want it. And one of the things I realize is during times of uncertainty, and we've seen this in history and in the past is after the struggles, people like to go back to basics. And one of the things that I think would go back to basics is just kind of teaching and having that interaction, that one-to-one, that teacher, mentee, mentor idea. And I don't really know if they're going to adapt it. You know, I hope not, because I like my snow days. But we'll see. I guess it's everything's kind of a wait and see. I think, if anything, we've learned that we can.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, at least we know that there are alternatives and that we as a species can adapt. And so, you know, whatever will be, but that's kind of where I see it going.
Once again, that was Teep Menon, a teacher over at John Rennie High School, giving us his opinion on online school and its effects on teachers and students.
The last guest, which we were able to interview, is Jessica Chisholm, the Operational Director of Access Open Minds. She will be giving her opinions and firsthand experience with the pandemic and its effect on students' mental health.
How is online school viewed in mental health care?
Online school is viewed in mental health care and youth mental health care as a bit of a necessity, I think, given COVID-19, but also something that we've had to adapt to and are learning from every day as it continues, I think, longer than anybody had initially expected. I think it comes with its own sets of challenges as well. We're seeing a lot more youth who are feeling more isolated and perhaps a little bit more depressed. But on the other hand, we've also heard cases of youth who are really struggling in the traditional school system that are actually doing a little better with virtual school. Youth who are facing bullying or anxiety at school, the online schooling has actually been a benefit to them.
What are some ways that students can improve their mental health while doing online school?
I think definitely taking a break. I know for many students, online school can be all day. And for anybody, whether you're a youth or an adult, all day on Zoom or on Teams or on a virtual platform does a number on you physically and mentally. So taking breaks, getting outside, being aware of yourself and checking in with yourself to see how you're feeling throughout the day, and making sure that you take time to care for yourself and connect with those who you can connect with, so your family, or if you can get outside and see a couple friends on a walk, something like that. All of those self-care tips can go a long way into avoiding the Zoom fatigue that we hear about now.
What are some resources that people in Montreal can receive support from at this time?
So your local CLSC is a great place to start, as well as your family doctor. There's Kids Help Phone and Jeunesse J'écoute, who can also help you connect to local resources in your area. And lastly, what I would say is the most important thing, if you're not feeling yourself and if you feel like something's wrong, tell somebody. It can be a friend, it can be your parents, it can be your family doctor, like I said, or a school counselor. But that first step for asking for help is really the hardest. And if you are feeling down or you're feeling like things aren't right, it's really important to reach out for help. It won't last forever and you won't always feel that way. And the first step is the hardest. So yeah, that's what I would suggest.
Once again, that was Jessica Chisholm, the Operational Director of Access Open Minds, a mental health initiative across Canada. Here's a clip from the PBS NewsHour talking on how the pandemic is impacting college students mentally, including some statistics that may shock you.
Mental health crises, courtesy of a college experience stripped almost entirely of campus life, tradition, and structure, on top of a pandemic.
College seems like a really far away concept right now.
No matter who you are, it really sucks.
It's really messed with my head in ways I never thought possible.
It's hard to sleep at night because you just sit in your apartment all day.
I think almost all of my friends have started going to therapy since the semester started.
More than 560,000 undergraduate students did not enroll this fall compared to 2019. Even in normal times, those who report mental health struggles are nearly twice as likely to drop out of school than their peers. One in four Americans between the ages of 18 and 24 reported having seriously considered suicide in the last 30 days, according to the CDC. And nearly 70% of college presidents now say student mental health ranks among their top concerns.
Although we know the COVID-19 pandemic has affected us all in many different ways, schools were specifically hit hard by all the rule changes. They had to quickly adapt to a new format with zero time to adjust. They learned very fast that there are many pros and cons to this new way of teaching. Both students and teachers have had their mental health tested during these challenging times. Remember, if you or someone you know is struggling with mental health, please seek help. Here are some resources in Montreal and the West Island which are there to offer help and support. You can contact your local CLSE, nurses and counselors at your school, and the Kids Help Phone. Once again, this has been Megan Bell and William Duham for John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.5.
Hello everyone, I'm Madeline McQuinney with John Abbott on the Air at CKUT 90.3 FM, and this is my documentary, Separated. Did you know that Canada has the 29th highest divorce rate in the world? One out of every 309 adults are divorced in Canada, with over half of these adults sharing kids with their divorcee. In this documentary, I'm going to discuss and research the effects that divorce has on children on a more precise level. Research shows that later in life, children of divorce may be vulnerable to drug and alcohol use in adolescence, have fears about commitment and divorce, and have negative memories of the legal system that forced custody and visitation. This is what Paul Friedman, a marriage counselor for over 20 years, had to say about this subject.
Teen pregnancies, way more. Suicides, way more. Stealing things, way more. Drugs, alcohol, way more. Screwed up relationships, way more.
I spoke with Logan Watmore, a dear friend of mine and someone whose parents divorced when he was young.
How do you think your parents' breakup affected you mentally?
I'm pretty pessimistic about relationships. Also pretty wary of them, I guess you could say.
Research shows that children do better when parents can minimize conflict and cooperate on behalf of the kids. I talked to Barbara McQuinney, who is also a child of divorce, about this subject.
They definitely did not co-parent. My parents did not get along.
It is also said that children of divorce are 35% more likely to have a divorce of their own. I also discussed this with Barbara.
It's probably true because I never believed in marriage, and at 25 decided I should probably get married. So I did, and it didn't work, and I got divorced.
Dr. Lara Groschow, a therapist, child psychiatrist, and marriage counselor, also spoke about this subject.
It's really important that there is consistency, predictability, and dependability when it comes to that. If a parent promises something to a child, such as an event that they're going to go to or a night that they're going to spend together, it needs to be agreed upon beforehand. So parents need to work cooperatively as they can on scheduling things.
Out of all cases of parental divorce, 90% of divorced mothers have custody of their children. 79% of custodial mothers receive child support, and under 30% of custodial fathers receive child support. This is what Barbara had to say about this.
Did you know that 90% of divorced mothers have custody of their children, and what are your thoughts on this?
Because I don't think any woman worth her cloth is going to give up her kids.
Saying that as a mother yourself?
Exactly.
Of all children born to married parents who divorced, 50% will experience the divorce of their parents before they reach their 18th birthday. This is the case for both Logan and Barbara, whose parents both divorced when they were at a young age.
I think like 6 or 7.
I was 5 years old.
If you are considering divorce, it is important to note that you should watch for signs of depression, anxiety, and other mental health issues coming from your child and bring those concerns to a doctor right away. Because considering the potential emotional consequences that children from divorced homes experience, you may want to find a counselor for your child to talk to throughout the process and for a year or so afterwards. Even after that year, you should keep checking up on your children. A study of children 6 years after a parental marriage breakup revealed that even after all that time, these children tended to be lonely, unhappy, anxious, and insecure. If you are considering divorce, please keep in mind that you may be affecting more lives than one. Keeping an eye on your children after a divorce can put them in a better place mentally. I'm Madeline McQuinney with John Abbott on the air at CKUT 90.3 FM, and that was my documentary, Separated. Stay safe.
Hello, listeners. My name is Andrea Nikolov, and welcome back to CKUT 9.3 FM, John Abbott on the air. So today's topic may be slightly different from what you usually get on the show, but I really wanted to answer a question that's been bugging me for the longest time now. How exactly has COVID been affecting those who've just now recently graduated from university and are going into the workforce? To get a better sense of what we're doing right now, I'll be interviewing Alice Nikolov, a recent Sherbrooke University alumni, over the phone to get a better understanding of how the field of law has been affected. Can you please state your name and your place of work?
Yes, so my name is Alice Nikolov, and I'm an intern for the CNESSD.
So as a graduate in the law program, I wanted to ask, since you had to go through the bar, how long was everything delayed for, and
how did they eventually work around restrictions, and, you know, was it a stressful time overall?
So to begin, the bar usually is from September to December, and there is no breaks in between, so it's a full 4 months of classes that are in person. And because of COVID, they had to delay the beginning of the classes. So rather than starting end of August, we started beginning of September, which was about 2 or 3 weeks of delay. And rather than ending so with our exams before Christmas, we had to do our exams after Christmas. So we ended up finishing our exams in mid-January. Because of that, the beginning of our internships were also delayed.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than starting at the beginning of January, they started around mid-February.
Gotcha, okay. Eventually, did you guys manage to get your grades on time, or was that also delayed because of, like, everything that was happening?
And it was a very stressful period because we were living in such uncertainty. The bar was very unclear about whether our exams would be online, in person. They kept changing their minds. We were never sure about anything, up to even a week prior to the exam, we didn't even know if it would be online. So that was a very stressful period, and the bar was not cooperative at all.
Mm-hmm.
And regarding to our final grades, yes, there was a big delay. Rather than getting our grades about a week and a half to 2 weeks, we got them 3 weeks later, which was added to the whole stressful situation already because we... You know, the bar is a very hard exam, so we really were eager to know if we passed or not.
Gotcha. Well, you passed. but actually, in jumping into that, as a newly graduate, do you feel that, like, the transition into the workforce after being online for so long was a challenge, or did you find comfort in it since you'd been working in it for almost a year at that time?
It's true that I began my online classes back in March when I was finishing my university degree. And to be quite honest, yes, my classes up until January were online, which was, you know, I adapted over time. It was very difficult at first, but then with time I managed to learn some tricks and how to manage to actually do my homework correctly and submitting it and whatnot. But yes, my internship is actually online as well. So I've had managed my online classes online and working, transitioning from a school environment to work environment wasn't that hard because it was online. But I would say that since it's an internship, we don't learn the same way as we're supposed to learn things in school. So it was hard because when you work, especially when you begin working in a new place, you have to meet with the people. They have to teach you how everything is done in a company, mm-hmm. in a commission, wherever you work. And usually during that first internship, that's when you you meet people that might help you in your future career, and mm-hmm. you make connections, like you said.
Yeah.
So I would say that was the hardest part because it's been 3 months that I've been working, and I haven't met anyone, obviously, face-to-face, only chatted online and had a few Zoom meetings, and I don't feel like I've connected with anyone on a personal basis. So I don't feel like when this is over, when I finish this internship, I will remain in contact with those people, which is not very good because they're supposed to be my future colleagues, some of them.
Exactly. Especially in law, since connections are really important. Obviously, I'm assuming it's very hard to not have that entire, like, the social interaction that law is based on. Yeah, since you can't really make any connections, and do you sometimes fear, obviously we don't know what can happen and we don't know how COVID is going to evolve, but do you feel at the moment that you fear for your future career as a lawyer? Like, are there some aspects that you worry about?
Definitely. It's very worrisome. I actually followed closely the job opportunities right now on the market, and in the law field, it's very hard to find a job. Because a lot of lawyers were fired. Mm-hmm. A lot of lawyers they weren't hired anymore. And yes, I fear that because law is not as essential as other mm-hmm. fields. And I would say that right now, the only fields that are blooming are really the essential workers. And yes, we were, for a part of the pandemic, we're considered essential. Mm-hmm. But to be quite honest, there's enough and even too many lawyers already in Montreal. And with this pandemic, the job opportunities are really scarce in that field. So yes, I worry that I might have to, find something related, but not exactly a job opportunity as in law as a lawyer.
Well, there you have it, folks. A big thank you again to Ms. Alice Nikolov for enlightening us on how the pandemic has affected those graduating from university and are now entering the workforce. I'm Andrea Nikolov, and this has been CKUT 90.3 FM. We'll catch you next time.
Don't you just love going to the beach on a hot summer day, rolling out that towel, sunbathing, swimming? We all know how important it is to stay hydrated when you're in the sun all day. Finding a beach full of garbage and empty plastic bottles isn't my idea of a beach day. Keep those beaches clean. Get a reusable water bottle. You'll even save money from all those plastic bottles you won't need anymore. Hydrate responsibly. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is John Abbott on the air. I'm Evie Stockvis. See you next time.
Our data. When you're not paying for a product, you are the product. Especially in web and email services, where multinationals compete to manage your communication so they can make a profit off of the private communication you are producing. Coombit is a worker cooperative trying to help small organizations or individuals get their email, website creation, and website hosting services off corporate services such as Google. For more information, contact us at coombit.org or email at info@coombit.org. That's KOUMBIT. We are not on Facebook.